I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today on Faith Conversations, Dr. Jennifer Degler joins us. And for those of you unfamiliar with Jennifer, she is a good friend, number one, but she is a psychologist, a life coach, an author, a speaker, a wife, and a mom. And she is passionate about helping people create healthy, successful relationships. She's a lifelong Kentuckian. I won't hold that against her. She bleeds blue for the Big Blue Nation. You know, Jennifer, I've got a son who's at University of South Carolina. So I'm not. Are you SEC? So is University of Kentucky SEC or ACC?
We are SEC.
Oh, so
and
you're...
We rule the... Let me just say, in basketball, we rule the SEC.
Well, my son's in the SEC, and I'm sad to say that that actually is true, that you do rule the SEC. Well, Dr. Degler has helped so many people through the years, and I have to say she has especially helped me through her book, No More Christian Nice Girl. And I'm excited to be talking with her today, specifically about marriage issues and conflict in particular. And I'm not saying that this is happening in my own marriage right now, Jennifer. That's not why I'm talking about it. But this is good stuff for anyone who, and actually these themes will be transcendent. But certainly we are specifically talking about some couple conflicts. And we're going to look at some specific key steps to resolving those conflicts. And where do we begin? Because I know, guaranteed, most people listening, actually, if they're breathing, they have had conflicts. If they're married, they've had some kind of conflicts in their marriage. But my guess is there are certain kinds of conflicts that raise their ugly head more often in relationships than other kinds of conflicts.
You are right, Anita. And in fact, happy couples do argue. You can't predict marital satisfaction based on whether couples argue or not. Everybody has conflict. What is important is how you argue and learning to, when you have differences, to argue in a way that doesn't rip at the fabric of your marriage. And in fact, what I'm going to be talking about today is drawn from John Gottman's work. He's really the foremost marriage researcher in America and has done some amazing longitudinal research really looking at what distinguishes the masters of marriage from the disasters of marriage. And, you know, he found that really about 70% of what couples argue about, have conflict over, it's perpetual. The stuff you're having conflict over your first year of marriage is usually what you're having conflict over in your 50th year of marriage. But those masters of marriage have learned how to have a sense of humor about those perpetual conflicts because they're usually based on personality differences, like one's a spender and one's a saver, and one's a morning bird and the other is prefers to stay up late, and one's more of a disciplinarian and one's more of a kind of laissez-faire parent.
So, and in my situation, one's messy and one's neat.
There you go. Yes. And that's not going to go away.
Sure, sure.
And so we have to learn how to keep our sense of humor about those things. And so about the 30% of the things we argue about are actually solvable. They're things that we can actually, if we really work on arguing well and following these steps that I'm going to give you, then we can have success in solving the problems and the conflicts that we can then actually make go away because they're not really based on personality differences between the two of us.
I love that. So solvable problems.
Yes.
Well, let me ask, are the perpetual problems solvable?
Well, it depends on what you mean by solvable. If you mean we're never, ever going to be irritated by this issue again and we're never going to have another conflict about this, then no, they're not solvable. But those are things that we have to just keep that problem in its place.
Sure.
And when couples are not able to solve any of their conflicts, then everything the marriage becomes so heavy and you just begin to see your partner as your enemy instead of your best friend. And so we want to really work on, okay, what are some steps, some key things that we can do so that couples, when they do have conflict, that it goes much better and you come out of it with a feeling of success and like, hey, we navigated this. We can do this, because every marriage is going to have conflict.
Mm. That's a given. That's a given. So yes. So let's work on solving those solvable problems. That's probably the place we need to start.
That is a great place to start. And the first step is to soften your startup. It's so interesting, Anita, to look at videotapes of people having conflict. And if you were to rate on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being very, very mild and 10 being just a rip-roaring, drag-out fight, if you were to rank, okay, what level did you start at? Did you start at a 3, or did you start this conflict at a 7 or an 8?
Okay.
Depending on where you started, 96% of the time you can predict the outcome of a conversation based on the first 3 minutes of a 15-minute conversation.
Wow.
So that means your startup is incredibly important, that we have a softened startup rather than just coming at our spouse. You know, if you come in at an 8 or a 9, that conversation is not going to end at a 2 or a 3.
So give, yeah, I hear you, and I totally believe that and agree. Give an example of a soft startup versus a harsh startup to a conversation or a conflict.
So a harsh startup, well, let me start with a soft startup. Let's say the issue is, you know, your spouse has spent more money than you all agreed on this month.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could either come in with a soft startup, which would be a valid complaint, but that doesn't contain any criticism. So you simply state facts. You say, hey, I've been looking over our credit card statements, and I noticed that, you know, that you spent $100 more than we agreed on for going out to eat. Can we talk about this? Now, that is still confrontational. I am confronting the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I am, you know, I've got a complaint here.
Yeah.
But if I wanted to come at you very harshly, I could throw in some criticism like, hey, I've been looking over the credit card statements, and I noticed, you know, you spent $100 more. And, what is wrong with you? Can you not just keep the simple agreement that we had, and you're going to put us in the poorhouse? And, you know, why can't you do something as simple as pack your own lunch? Okay, all of a sudden, that is jacked up to 7 and 8, and that is not going to end well because our startup was really harsh.
I see that. Yeah. So the first thing we have to think about is our startup. How, you know, when there's conflict, inevitably there will be, as you said, how we start makes a big difference.
It really does. And one of the things John Gottman identified as what happens after this harsh startup, when you come in harshly, it opens the floodgates for what he calls the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
That doesn't sound good.
That doesn't sound good. You know, back in the book of Revelation, the four horsemen appear, and each one that comes out, something successively worse happens on the earth. So he identified, by videotaping couples over the years and coding their interactions, that this thing happens, and it just spirals out of control. And so the first horseman that comes out, that's a lethal type of negative interaction that'll happen if you use harsh startup, is criticism, where you add negative words about your mate's character or their personality. You're basically saying, you know, what's wrong with you? And Anita, using the word why almost always is not a good idea.
Okay.
When you are presenting, I always encourage couples, take why out of your vocabulary.
That's good.
When you have a complaint about your spouse, because when you ask somebody, why did you leave your socks all over the bathroom floor? Or why can you not pick up your clothes, or why can you not stick to this budget?
All right, what do we replace why with?
To say, you state a fact. I noticed that your socks are all over the bedroom floor, and we talked about that you were going to pick up your clothes off the floor. Mm-hmm. Versus why, which implies, what is
wrong with you?
You idiot, what are you doing? And that kind of criticism leads into the next horseman, which is contempt, which is where you convey disgust with your spouse through sarcasm or name-calling or eye-rolling. Women in particular are really prone to eye-rolling. And it always scares me as a therapist when I have a couple seated on my couch in my office and there's some eye-rolling going on because I know there's contempt in their minds. And contempt is the rat poison of marriage.
Hmm.
It will really just destroy a marriage. And when you're contemptuous and you demean your spouse, then your spouse gets defensive. And that's the third horseman.
Ooh, okay.
And all of a sudden, they start saying, hey, I'm not the problem. You're the problem.
Hmm.
Well, maybe I spent too much money, but you did this and this. And finally, if it goes on long enough, the fourth horseman can appear, which is stonewalling, which is where one person just totally tunes the other person out. And they don't even speak to them. They don't even look at them. And then, you know, at that point, there's no way we're going to have good conflict resolution. What we're having is a marriage that's being damaged.
Wow. I'm still thinking about the eye rolling, too, because if that's happening in the therapist's office, well, you know it's happening lots more at home.
Exactly, because they're usually on their best behavior.
Right, right.
They're trying to, until they get rolling in your office. And then you see, you know, it kind of all unfolds in front of you and the ugliness that can happen when we don't soften our startup. And so it's so important to learn to dial it back.
Mm-hmm.
Just in your mind, when something is bothering you with your spouse and you're thinking, I got to go confront that. In your mind, whatever you are about to say, ask yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, how harsh is this, and how can I dial this back to a 2 or 3? Because if I want this conflict to go well and end well, then I have to start at a level where I want it to end.
Right. And also, I'm thinking because often when we're confronted with something or see something and we think, oh, I want to go talk to my spouse right now, maybe a wiser move is also to wait and have that conversation later, because a little bit of time passing can also be an aid in helping you dial it back.
That is a great point, Anita. If you just feel so angry that, you know, if I open my mouth, I am going to blast them, then don't open your mouth. Wait. We don't want couples to store things up. You know, Ephesians 4:26 and 27 talks about, you know, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Mm-hmm. But also, don't let your anger be the burning inferno of the sun spilling over your spouse. And so trying to keep short accounts, but also making sure you're actually in a place emotionally where you can stay at around a 3 rather than an 8. Could I give you a couple more suggestions?
I would love it. I think we need these kind of tools in our marital toolbox.
Yes, these are very practical. When you're making that valid complaint, you want to make sure you're not blaming them. Now, it may be their fault, but blaming is never productive because it makes people defensive. So instead of blaming, you want to just make statements of fact. This is what I observe, not a blaming kind of thing. And of course, it always helps to make statements that begin with I instead of you.
Right.
So you could say, I want us to save more money versus you are so careless with money. Now, it doesn't count, the I statement thing doesn't count if you say, I think you are so careless with money.
Got to get the you out of there altogether.
Exactly, exactly. And so you want to describe what you see happening without judging it. So, for instance, you might say, I've I've been cleaning up the kitchen by myself for the last week, and we had agreed upon that we were going to do that together. Mm-hmm. And so you're not blaming, you're not accusing, you're just describing what you see happening. Be clear and directly ask for what you want so many times. And I think women in particular are guilty of this. We expect our spouse to read our minds.
Yes.
Like he works for the Psychic Friends Network.
Yes.
Magically, no. Of course he should know. I want, and we need to ask directly for what we want. We need to be polite, say please and thank you and I would appreciate, and be very appreciative of past good efforts. It goes a long way. If you're going to present a valid complaint to your spouse, if you will start off by saying, I know you've really been working on saving money, and I know you've really worked hard to try and stay with our budget, but this month we went over budget, and let's talk about that. Because most people are trying hard.
Yes.
And we like it. It feels good to hear your spouse acknowledge that you are trying. So those are some suggestions for softening your startup.
So what if we started a little bit too hard there with the startup, and you know, we need to kind of come back and have a follow-up conversation. We need to try and repair things with our spouse. What might that look like?
Anita, that's a great lead-in to the second step, which is to learn to make and receive repair attempts, because things are, as you said, things are going to go wrong. A little criticism is going to slip up. We're going to roll our eyes. We're going to sigh really loud or something, and all of a sudden...
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I'm from the South, and we are big sighers in the South. And so we're going to need to make a repair attempt. And then a repair attempt is an effort by either one of you to put the brakes on in an argument. And it's an attempt to de-escalate the tension and just to control any further damage that might happen to the relationship. And the better friends you are with someone, the more successful your repair attempts are going to be, which is why it's so important for couples to develop their friendship. Because
yes.
Think about a relationship with a good friend that's maybe the same sex as you. And so if they say something, you know, that kind of hurts your feelings, and they kind of realize, ooh, I've just said something, I've stepped on some toes or whatever, and they go to say, ooh, can I take that back? Or let me rephrase that. Usually you'll let them. Because that's a repair attempt when somebody says,
yeah.
Let me rephrase that, or can I take that back, or let me try again.
Yeah, and you'll let them do it because you have an established relationship already.
Exactly.
Because you're kind of believing the best in people that you have established relationships with.
Right, because you have a friendly approach to them. They have a reservoir of goodwill in your mind. But if you've been thinking a lot of contemptuous thoughts about them, then you're not going to let them you're not going to receive their repair attempt. And the success or failure of a couple's repair attempts is the primary factor in whether a marriage flourishes or fails. Because as you said, Anita, all of us are going to say things we regret.
Mm-hmm.
And so will we, first of all, are we willing to make repair attempts when we say the wrong thing? And are we willing to receive our spouse's repair attempt when they say the wrong thing? And so a repair attempt is not always this very sweet, sorry for what I just said. It can be just, I need a break.
Mm.
I need a time out.
Mm.
It can be, please be quiet and listen to me. Please listen to me.
Mm.
That is your spouse saying, we need to calm this thing down.
Yeah.
And so your job is to receive that well when your spouse does that. Can I tell you a funny story about Jeff making a repair?
Oh, yeah, I would love it.
Okay. So when early in our marriage, I had a very cutting tongue. I would make a lot of sarcastic remarks. I was the one who had trouble with controlling my words and my tongue. And I would just say these very cutting things to Jeff. And so he started doing this, and it always worked to just de-escalate the tension. I would say something, and he would all of a sudden act like he started up a chainsaw, and he'd have a chainsaw in his hand, and he'd make a chainsaw sound. And then he would mimic that he was cutting off his knees, and then he would fall on the ground.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, letting me know, you just cut me off at the knees. And then he'd be there on the ground, kind of squirming.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And it always made me laugh. I mean, sometimes I kind of thought, well, while you're down there, I might have to kick you while you're down there because I'm still mad.
I love it.
No, I never did that, but I would be like, oh, did I just
did
do
I just
something cutting?
Do that, say that. Yeah, that's great.
And we need, you know, I need to, first of all, apologize for what I've just said. But it was a sense of humor. So you can use humor to de-escalate
the
tension.
And I'll add my own kind of humorous story, too. My husband is funny. And my line with him is, you are really funny, except when you're not. And so sometimes if there's something that's just a little too over the edge, I'll just go, except when you're not.
And see, that's like a little code phrase.
It is.
And it's perfect because it's short. And usually when you're upset, if you say a lot of words, you're probably going to
not good. Yeah.
So it's so great when couples develop this shorthand to let the other person know you are treading on thin ice.
Yes.
And that's really wise. And this really applies to all relationships.
Yes.
But particularly those where you're in a lot of daily contact with that person.
Yeah.
And you have a more intimate relationship with them. You're going to rub up against them.
Yep.
Sandpaper.
And I love that. Like sandpaper. And I'm thinking, you know, all of this comes out of Proverbs. You know, I think the verse in Proverbs, the power of life and death is in your tongue. You know, so that's a paraphrase, but you get that. I mean, and there's so many scripture that can be pulled out of Proverbs that speak of this kind of relational stuff. So you're not just talking out of the professional therapist's office. You're talking out of scripture as well here, Jennifer.
Oh, absolutely. If I could just share a couple of Proverbs that are so... I just love how the Bible is so practical, and it really works if we apply it. Proverbs 19:11, people with good sense restrain their anger. They earn esteem by overlooking wrongs. And that's what when your spouse tries to make a repair attempt and you let them, you're overlooking a wrong. And that is, you have good sense if you do that. Proverbs 15:18, a hothead starts fights. A cool-tempered person tries to stop them. That's what a repair attempt is.
Love it.
It's an attempt to, so scripture is so practical if we will take that and apply it. And certainly Proverbs is good relationship stuff. There's a lot of relationship wisdom in the book of Proverbs.
Well, I think we've got time for another one of these steps for helping to deal with conflict when you're in a setting, a marriage setting. And as you said earlier, a lot of these themes are really, they're transcendent and can help you in conflict in any kind of relationship, whether it's workplace or with a child or a parent, sibling, whatever. But we're talking in the context today of couples relationships.
Well, and this third step, this final step that we want to talk about is really one that if you have a history of you guys getting a lot of arguments, and this next step is to soothe yourself and each other, and that's because conflicts can trigger flooding and repetitive negative thoughts, and flooding is what we call this physical distress thing that happens in your body when all of a sudden you feel attacked by your spouse, and your heart rate will go up, your blood pressure goes up, you may start sweating, you're breathing faster, you're secreting adrenaline. It's that fight versus flight response that's kicked in, and you just are flooded, and it feels very physically distressing. It's uncomfortable. It feels yuck. And so what we know from research is that if your heart rate goes over 100 beats a minute due to conflict with your spouse, it is physically impossible for you to really hear your spouse anymore and to receive their repair attempts. one of the things sometimes that we have couples do in the counseling office is wear those watches that monitor your heart rate and set them so that they'll go off if the heart rate goes over 100 beats a minute. Because they're not even aware of how often when they argue that all of a sudden they're flooded and their heart rate has gone up so high that in their brain they can't think straight anymore. And what they really need to do is to take a break and soothe themselves. And we encourage them to, once that happens, you need to stop the discussion.
Okay.
And take a break for at least 20 minutes.
Okay, this is helpful. All right.
At least 20 minutes. That's a minimum that it's going to take the human body to calm down. Once that fight versus flight response has been triggered and you are ready to fight back with some criticism and some contempt and some defensiveness, or to flee and run away, and all of that's been triggered, it's going to take at least 20 minutes for you to calm down. And during that time, you and your spouse, you can go separate rooms, calm down. You want to avoid feeding thoughts that your spouse is in the wrong and that you are the innocent victim, because that's just going to keep you stirred up. And I know I've done that before, where I thought, we need to take a break, and then I spend 20 minutes telling myself how terrible he is and how wonderful I am and how I'm right and he's wrong. And then I'm not any calmer. I haven't soothed myself. All I've done is stir up my anger. I think of Psalm 37:8 that says, bridle your anger, trash your wrath, cool your pipes. It only makes things worse. That's out of the Message.
Good.
Paraphrase. I just love that, though. Cool your pipes, because it's only going to make things worse if you don't. So taking that time out, and during that time, do something soothing and distracting. Listen to praise music. Get some exercise. Read the Bible. Pray. Do some relaxation exercises. You want to do some things to calm yourself down again. And then maybe you can come back and continue the discussion. Well, maybe you need to wait a few hours. Maybe you need to wait till the next morning and then continue that discussion.
I'm thinking also, Jennifer, I want to ask you about the spouse who is always the one giving in. They don't really even handle conflict well, and so they always just kind of cave. They might gain the nerve to address conflict, but never ever dream of saying you. They always say I, and are good with that kind of thing and the repair attempts and all of this, but they always end up giving in. It always tends to be one-sided, even if they're the one that initiates it. Any counsel for that kind of conflict, or the way, you know, conflicts that tend to go that way?
Well, we want to make sure that we are a peacemaker, not a peace faker.
Yeah, oh, I like that. I like that you didn't say peacemaker versus peacekeeper. Peacemaker versus peace faker. Ooh.
Right, a peacemaker. And peacekeeper sometimes is a peace faker.
Right, right.
But I really like thinking of the words, this is not peacemaking, this is peace faking.
Yes.
Lying, in effect.
That's good.
Because you just, the physical distress and emotional distress that you feel over knowing somebody's angry with me or somebody's displeased with me, if you're like, I just don't have the emotional strength and tolerance yet to tolerate how yucky I feel when people are mad at me or my spouse is, you know, disapproves of me, and so therefore I'm just going to lie. And fake, like, okay, I can agree to this. Okay, I'm good with this. Then, you know, you're lying, and ultimately that is not loving. That is a sin, and it will not bring you an authentic relationship. Conflict is the price we pay for intimacy, and the first price is always the cheapest price to pay. So pay it up front. Go ahead and speak the truth in love the first time, because every time you lie and you put off speaking the truth in love, the cost goes up and up and up.
Well, we've just scratched the surface. We've talked about three keys to resolving your couple conflicts. There certainly are others, but we'll stop there, at least for today. And Jennifer, I'm sure that we'll have the opportunity to speak with you again. Dr. Jennifer Degler, one of my favorites, and I just want to mention that in the show notes, we'll have more information, a link to Dr. Degler's website where there are a lot of great tools and more information about her and her practice as well. So hope you'll check that out. Jennifer, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Anita.
I'm Anita Lustria, and you're listening to Faith Conversations.